Rebuilding Your Life, Moving from Disaster to Prosperity with Susan Chiraco, where we help you transform your life by changing what you're telling yourself. Whatever your circumstances, you can experience health, financial security, and a sense of well-being once again. And now, here's your host, Susan Chiraco.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to Rebuilding Your Life Radio, where we train your brain to claim your power and optimize your life. I'm so glad you stopped by to listen into our conversation with Georgia Lee McGowan today. If you've listened to my podcast or read my book, Rainbows Over Ruins, you're aware that I consider our connection to source energy, all that is, has been, will be, and ever will be, is a major part of my philosophy. Next is an awareness that we have a purpose in life. Discovering our purpose involves getting in touch with your true self, which is not necessarily as clear as you may think. On occasion, what is true to you may require courage to embrace who you are and live in that reality. Well, today's guest has spent her lifetime discovering her true self, making peace with it, and facing family and society with the reality. Please welcome Georgia McGowan as we explore her growing awareness of her true self and the path it has taken her down. Hello, Georgia. How are you today?
I'm just fine. How are you this morning, Susan?
I am rip-roaring, feeling great.
Good. I'm doing just fine.
Good. Georgia, when you and I first met, I asked you, what would you like me to know about you? And you didn't hesitate to be straight up front. Do you remember what you said to me?
Not really. I don't think so. Who knows?
You said to me, I was born George. And I took it from there.
That's true. That's absolutely true. I was born George. And I was actually born George the Third. So that took a long time to work through why George had these emotions he didn't understand, which I finally came to realize after an awareness that came through somebody else, that there was a second spirit embedded in that soul. I always kind of looked at it. Eventually, my conclusion was this, more or less, that one day up in heaven, God was busy packaging up souls and spirits, and I turned out to be an extra spirit at the end of the day. So he just said, okay, well, let's just plunk her in there with George. And it took a long time to figure that out, but I did.
Wow. You did. You absolutely did. But it took a while, so you had a pretty normal life. You got married. You got divorced.
Yes,
I
did.
You got married again.
I did.
Did you? I know your first marriage, you said, didn't last as long, but in your second marriage, you were together quite some time.
Yes, we were married. About a little over 22 years. She passed away from brain cancer.
She was, as you were making these changes in your life and coming to full self-awareness, she was observing this. And what was her reaction to it all?
Oh, at first she hated it. And for a long time she hated it. And I didn't understand why she wasn't just tickled plumb spitless that to discover there was this female in, somewhere in there in the inside that handsome bearded cowboy that she married. I just didn't understand it, and so it did take her a long time. And some of my behaviors, which weren't exactly exemplary, had a lot to do with that. I look at it this way. She suddenly discovered inside this man that she married, there was this 14-year-old Chippy, okay, which is pretty much what I acted like, and that's not uncommon in the gender mm-hmm. identity world. It's just not uncommon at all. Because everybody has to grow up, including those second spirits that are existing.
Wow.
So I do that. As you progressed in your understanding of yourself and had the, I want to say the word courage, to start to bring this inner spirit forward, you got happier and happier. How did she feel about that?
What was the question again? I'm not sure I understood.
How did your second wife react when she saw you becoming so happy with this personality?
Yeah. Well, at first she wasn't very happy with it. But what happened was, I was terribly in love with her. And so was George. Both of us were. But the point was that I was not being accepted. And George spent a lot of time trying to make me go away. A lot of prayers. God, please take it away. Get rid of it. I don't want it. And there was one particular circumstance. I'd been given this instruction from my AA sponsor when he found out about my existence, that George, every time I started to appear, was to repeat, "Get thee behind me, Satan, in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit," three times. And I had done that faithfully, and George had done it, and it didn't work. And one day I was on my way, to work, and I gave up. I'll never forget where I was. I'd stopped at a specific intersection near where our home was, and I just bowed my head. I stopped at that stop sign and didn't proceed through it. I bowed my head and I said, "God, I cannot take this any longer. Please, I will accept this as a gift and not a curse anymore. I just ask that you help me understand why you made me this way." And I proceeded on through the stop sign and down, and by the time I got to the next stop sign a mile away, the most incredible sense of peace and calm had settled over me. I liken it to a warm blanket on a cold winter night. It was an amazing feeling. And nothing happened. I didn't make any physical appearances. And about 6 months later, George and Marilyn were having dinner, and she looked across the table at him and said, "Are you having an affair?" "No. Why? Why would you ask that question?" He was pretty much baffled, because it never occurred to him ever have an affair. He was in love with her. And she said, "Don't lie to me. I want to know if you've met another woman and fallen in love." And he said, "No, please explain to me why you're accusing me of that. What have I done?" Her response was really kind of amazing. She said, I don't understand what's happened." She said, "In the last 6 months," she said, "you have changed so much." She said, "All of the anger's gone." She said, "You are become such a pleasure to be around. I can't wait, actually cannot wait to get home from work in the evening just to be around you." And I'm trying to figure out why that happened. We lived in the same house. We had the same friends. We had the same jobs. We made the same amount of money, drove the same cars. She said everything was the same. Only thing I could figure was that it was another woman. Well, it was, kind of. It was me. But you know what? That is not what she wanted to hear. She could have dealt with another woman. She could have shot another woman, okay? I mean, if you went that far. But she couldn't shoot this one without doing away with her handsome prince. But it started a process of acceptance that took a little while. But she eventually, before she passed away, came to a full, complete acceptance of me and welcomed me into her life. Yeah, yes, she did.
That is a powerful thing. Now, you also tell a funny story, which you'll have to explain. You describe yourself as a kept woman.
Oh, well, you know, after Marilyn passed away, and I had no impediments anymore to being Georgia and going out, but still needed an income. So George worked all week long at his job and worked hard at it. And I spent the weekend spending his hard-earned money on clothes and having a good time. So I was like the equivalent of, I was basically a kept woman there for several years, because it took that long for things to develop. They didn't develop exactly the way I had anticipated for him, but that was it. I really was. I was living the life of Riley, because basically from Friday afternoon to Monday morning, I got to be a kept woman, so it was fun.
Now, you were all this time, were you making changes in yourself at that point to allow Georgia to emerge?
Yes, of course. You know, it's like one of the things people discover and men discover in this process is that they develop an aversion, an absolute aversion to body hair anywhere except on their head, And so I had begun a process shortly after she passed away. I began the process of laser, and which was then followed by electrolysis from my toenails to my eyebrows. That's pretty much what's happened. I have, George has very little hair on his head. I have to wear a wig because his head is just not very appropriate. he has a chrome dome, you might say.
So was your family observing this, and how did they respond to your going through this process?
Actually, my family wasn't aware of it for a long time, just simply because we lived a long way from the family. We didn't live near any of our family, so they didn't see what was going on. And much of the time in that process, when I was around family, it was George that was there and not me. It took a considerable amount of time. It got to when I the job that I had there for a while. What I would do is, when I would have my vacation, I would take vacation. I'd go to the family cabin up in Montana, usually over a Labor Day weekend. And when I got there, it was Georgia the whole time. George would arrive, Georgia would be there, George would leave to go back, because what would happen is there was always that stop in Salt Lake City where my parents lived, and to see them. So it had to be George going back. Now, at one of those points in there, I did sit down with my mother and told her about my existence. And she wasn't thrilled, to say the least. This was her oldest child, her pride and joy, telling her that he was not happy being who he was at that point. And but she didn't totally reject. It was just kind of left at that stage. And each time I went, because I understood from experience what people who just hear about it and don't see it can imagine. And one of those, a year or two later, one of those trips, we were talking, and my mother said, I somehow knew this was coming. That's why I always had photographs and portraits with me. And she said, well, what do you wear when you go out? And I knew immediately what she was thinking. She was envisioning her son in one of her mother's old house dresses with no makeup, no wig, mm-hmm. you know, hairy lip. I just knew, and I said, Mom, don't you think it's about time? Wouldn't you like to see a picture of what I actually look like? And she said, yeah, I suppose so. So I dashed downstairs and got the pictures and brought them up. And she sat there on that Parsons bench outside their bedroom and just running, very silently running over her fingers over one of the portraits in particular. And she finally looked up at me with tears in her eyes, and she said, I never knew. She said, you're beautiful. And finally, that was the next trip I made there like that. I called her before I left the cabin, of course, to tell you. And I said, hey, don't you think it's about time you actually met your other daughter? And she said, yes, I think, yes, I should. But my dad had Alzheimer's by then, and she didn't want him exposed. So she said, please don't arrive until after 9 o'clock when he's in bed asleep. So I did. I saw to it that I got there after 9. And we sat there and talked for, a couple of hours anyway. And finally, the woman who was Dad's caregiver, who had been in on all these conversations and stuff, said she left. And my mom and I were in the kitchen fixing a midnight snack. And I was there at the kitchen counter, and she came up behind me, and she put her hand on my shoulder, and she turned me to look, and she looked into my eyes. And she said, who are you? I don't see anything of my son in you at all. That, to me, was the most amazing statement. It meant that I had succeeded in doing what I wanted to do, which was I saw so many people in my situation, men in particular, in that male-to-female situation, they cannot quite let go of all the male mannerisms. They have to hang on to those for some reason, or they don't know how to let go of them, and which makes them stick out. It makes it very difficult for them to want. One of the big things for the gender identity community to do, if it's important, is to pass. That's what we call passing as a female. And for me, it was really important because I remembered, and one of the things that my wife impressed on me before she died was that when her handsome prince was there, that's who she wanted to see. She did not want to see a trace of me in him at all, and vice versa. When I was there, she did not want to see a trace of George at all. To the point that one night I came home from a Tri-S meeting, and she told me, I was getting ready to go to the meeting, and she wanted to see what I looked like. She said, okay, she wanted me to do a little turnaround. She said, honey, you look really nice, but you're still just a man in a dress. And that really hurt. I did not want to be a man in a dress, and it urged me on to really understand what it was like to really be a woman and how to react.
Wow.
So yes, that's
an education internally to make those changes.
Yes, it is. It is very much, you have to study, you have to sit and watch. I would go to the mall on occasion and just sit and watch women go by to see, because let's face it, there's a lot of women and there's a lot of men, and vice versa. A lot of women who don't dress necessarily extremely feminine, but it's obvious that they're women. Why is it so obvious that they are actually, that person is actually a woman, even though they may be dressed like a man? There's something that says this is a woman. Those were the things I wanted to watch and I wanted to study and understand.
Now, your mother eventually passed, and was that the point at which you began to go through the physical transition?
Yes, it was. Otherwise, I'd spent a ton of money on electrolysis, as I said. But other than that, no. And I really didn't think I would, because look, that surgery is not cheap. And for a long time, of course, no insurance would cover it. So it wasn't going to happen. And I was living my life as Georgia. I'd had a name change. I had been hired at Home Depot under those circumstances as Georgia as a kitchen designer. So I was in a position, they felt confident enough in my appearance and presentation to place me in that situation to where I was dealing so personally with other people. But at any rate, my mom passed, and after her funeral, realized that we'd gone through, my brother and sister and I had reviewed what money there was, and I realized with my share, I would have enough money to have that surgery. It was something that I wasn't certain I wanted to do. I needed to think about it and really, really be sure, because I'd seen so many people make that transition only to feel as though they had made a horrible mistake. And it is a huge contributing factor to the high suicide rate among transsexuals. It's like almost, it's over 10%, over 10 times what it is in the normal population. So I wanted to be sure that I didn't make that same kind of mistake. And so that was in the first week in October, and I didn't do anything at all. Much the most I did was in December call my best friend out in California, who had told me years before if that was a decision I made, she would go with me and hold my hand, do whatever it took to help me get through that transition. I did call her and I said, "Hey, you remember that promise you made me years ago?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, is it still good?" And she said, "Yes, of course." So I waited until it was early February before I finally picked up the phone and made a call to the surgeon that I had known for a long time that if I ever could do that, this is the surgeon I would use, who is Dr. Marcy Bowers, because Dr. Marcy Bowers is herself a post-surgical transsexual. And I wanted somebody who really, really understood, not just some guy who was a plastic surgeon doing it. And she was a gynecologist. So I did that, and I made the appointment, flew to San Francisco and had the appointment with her. And it was kind of funny because she came in. Of course, I gave her a copy of my book, obviously, when she first walked in.
Huh? You had written that book already. At what point did you write the book?
The book was published in 2012. Is when it was 2012 is when the book was published. So this was by now we were into 2015.
Okay. So just so our audience knows that, because I didn't mention it earlier, you wrote, "Dear Mom and Dad, You Don't Know Me, But." It was framed as letters to your mother and father?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the way it was. So at any rate, I gave her a copy of the book, and then she said, "Fine." But she said, "So tell me, do you have any questions for me?" And my first question was, "Well, yeah, am I too old?" She said, "What makes you think you're too old?" I said, "I'm 71 years old." She said, "You're what?" She said, "I thought I was dealing with someone in their 50s when I walked in here." I'm like, "Oh, thank you. I love you." That's the greatest compliment I've ever get, especially coming from a doctor. But anyway, so we talked for a bit and got more information. And as the interview was winding down, she said, "Unfortunately, my good fortune is your misfortune." So what do you mean? She said, "Well, I'm booked out for 2.5 years. Now, when you're 71 years old and somebody tells you that what you want to do is not going to happen until you're damn near 75, 74, 75, that's a heartbreak." And she said, "But for you, I will get you in within 9 months if I have to work an extra day of the week. Now, when I went there, my intention was to go do the interview, get the information, and still wait a few months before I made the decision. But with that statement from her, I walked out of there. I walked up to the front desk, and I filled out all the additional paper and left the deposit. A couple of weeks later, I got a phone call from her practice manager, and her practice manager said, I just need to clarify some information. She said, you have both Medicare and you have your insurance with your employer, Home Depot. And I said, yes, I do. She said, well, I said, but I don't want them hassled. She said, what do you mean? I said, well, you're hassling them about paying for the surgery. I don't want that to happen. I have the money. And she said, that's not what we do. I don't know what you've heard, which is what I had heard. She said, well, all we do is send them a letter and ask if it's a covered procedure. And I said, fine, go ahead. You'll get a no, it's not. That's okay. I can handle it. So that was all that happened, and nothing happened. I was thinking maybe if it did 9 months from the end of March, I was looking at probably December, January, maybe even February before I actually got the go-ahead from her. And I went back to work, and in June, I was getting ready to go on vacation in July, and I got a phone call from from the practice manager, and I got a letter in the mail from the insurance company. I thought, there's my rejection letter. And I opened it up and looked at it and blah, 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 and it said, gender reassignment surgery covered. And I thought, no, you got to be kidding me. I'm reading this wrong. I actually folded the letter up. I put it back in the envelope. And I sat there for about 5 minutes, and I opened it up again. Sure enough, I called Robin. I said, I just got this letter. Would that be the case? And she said, well, we don't have ours yet, but I'm not surprised. And I said, well, I sure as hell am. So anyway, I went on my vacation, and I got back from vacation, and then sometime there about the middle of July, I got a call from her, and she said, okay, we got our approval. You are covered. All you have to do is the remainder of your deductible. Oh, wow. So anyway, then her next question was, now this is only 5 months after the initial thing. She said, the next thing she said, how about September 1st? And I said, for what? She said, for your surgery. I was speechless. It didn't dawn on me that it would happen that quickly. I was literally speechless. And finally she said, are you there? And I said, well, yeah, I am. But I said, I was just taken aback. I wasn't expecting that. She said, well, do you want that date? And I said, well, yeah. And she said, are you going to have the breast implants at the same time? And I said, well, yeah, if it's going to happen that quick, heck yes. And she said, okay, September 2nd. So that was it. I called my friend Christine, and I said, I'm just sending you plane reservations to get to San Francisco on September 1st, and we're going to do this thing. So that's the way it happened. The only thing I want to add to that was something that happened to me after the surgery. I hadn't had surgery since I was 5 years old when I had my tonsils out. I had no idea what anesthesia was like. So there I am in the pre-op, and the anesthesiologist comes in and he says, okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you something to relax you, then give you something that'll put you to sleep, and then we use general anesthesia during the surgery. I'm fine. So basically I thought I just dozed off, and I came to and I was, thinking, wait, when are they going to get started? And then I realized I was back in my hospital room. It was done. And you know what happened to me next? was I thought, oh my God, I've made a horrible mistake. Now, if I hadn't been prepared, I didn't think it would happen to me, but I knew it was a possibility. And I understood why so many people do eventually commit suicide. I immediately went to work on my own head. And I would say within 2 hours, I was fine, and I have never looked back, never regretted it for a second.
Ah, that's fantastic. I mean, to go through all of that and to make it past the biggest hurdle, which is the mental part of it. That's really something. So you've gone on. I mean, you healed up. You went back to your work at Home Depot.
Yes.
You've gone on with your life. You've
yes,
married again.
Yes, I have. She was my customer. It's really a funny kind of a funny. I just look. People would tell me after Marilyn passed away, you know, when are you going to get married again? Blah blah. And I'm not. You know, aren't you lonely? Well, yeah, I'm lonely. But you know, she was a tough act to follow. And if I met somebody I was even remotely interested in, I had this tendency to start comparing.
Okay.
Because I had this vision of who and why, how it would be if I did get married again, and I wasn't seeing it anywhere. And it was 16 years. I was alone for 16 years and had become very comfortable in that situation. Mm-hmm. And one day, I came to work and somebody had made an appointment for me to do a preliminary interview with a customer that wanted to have their kitchen remodeled. She came in, she sat down. She said, I need to get my kitchen remodeled. And that started it. It was like, she was adorable. She had a terrific sense of humor. She tells me that at one point I said to her, I'll bet you're a lot of fun. And which she is. She still is to this day. In my relationship with Marilyn was not one that involved a lot of laughter. Yes, it was a happy relationship, but I really don't remember any laughter per se.
Okay.
With Barb, laughter is a daily, almost momentary thing with her. It's just she's funny. She knows how to make me laugh until I just can almost stop breathing. I'm laughing so hard. So yeah, it took a funny thing about it is she ended up going to Lowe's to get her doggone kitchen done because she didn't trust our installers at Home Depot. But but so it took
a relationship was started, right? That's why.
Well, yeah, I was kind of on hold for a bit. Because I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I was afraid to call her because I understand situations like that. People don't want to answer the phone because they don't want to answer for that. So it took about a month or so for me to work up the courage to call her, and she answered the phone. We talked. We decided we would have lunch together the following Sunday before I went to work, and then a couple of weeks after that, we were supposed to go to coffee, and it didn't work out, so we went to dinner. And we talked a long time when we went to dinner that time. I just have this vision. I remember watching her walk to her car, and it just gave me warm fuzzies, okay? here was the thing of it. I was only imagining a friendship. I never imagined a romantic relationship with her. She was just somebody I loved to be around and somebody I wanted for a friend. I could envision long trips with her just as a friend. And we went to dinner a third time, and she said, okay, but this time I'm driving. You pick the restaurant, but I'm driving. And I said, okay, that was a new one. So anyway, she picked me up. We went to dinner. Again, we talked for quite a while. And she went to take me back home and said, we got to the house. And I said, would you like to come in for a few minutes? She said, sure. So she came in. Sat there at the breakfast thing, and we talked for maybe another half hour, 45 minutes. And And she, well, I've got to head for home. I thought, fine, because she's a little, she stood up and I stood up, and she's a little bit shorter than me. And so I'm, you know, just trying to be nice, whatever. I went to kiss her on the forehead, and she planted a big one on me. I tell you what, it was, you talk about fireworks. It literally, it took me aback. It again took my breath away. And then she said, do you mind it? And I said, no, I just wasn't expecting that. I said, you know, but it just changed my whole vision of what our relationship could be.
Could be. And, wow.
Yes,
so
it went
from, I have a question that goes on towards, you know, what you did with your book and
sure.
all of this. Were you publicizing your book? Were you getting responses that told you how people were responding to your story?
I've got when the book first came out, there was a dozen reviews on Amazon that were just incredible. I think one review was done by one of these jerk reviewers somewhere else that was really negative, accused me of having a hell of an ego, et cetera, to publish something like that. But other than that, I've never had anything but good reviews on the book. It just, the publisher does not have a very good promotional program. And I spent a lot of money promoting that book, and it went nowhere. I followed every one of their suggestions on promotion. They were no good. I should have just abandoned anything other than letting them publish the book and done my own promotional stuff, spent my own money on it. I worked in the advertising business. I understand advertising, I understand sales, but since it was a book and nothing I'd ever done in the publishing field before, I trusted them, and they did a beautiful job on the production of the book, but man, their promotional department is not up to snuff, in my opinion.
It's not up to it, yeah.
It's
so
more,
you
of
also,
more of a fundraiser, huh?
Mm-hmm. It's a fundraiser, right.
Yeah.
No, that's which addresses the fact that you also have gotten involved in helping others who have chosen to be transgender.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And a lot of that comes from the fact that, look, I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I've learned something valuable in that, you know, you need to help other people that aren't as far
mm-hmm.
along as you. And
yes,
I do. And I get occasional phone calls. I get emails when I do these things in colleges and stuff. I invariably will have one or two students contact me with wanting some support, wanting mm-hmm. more information, wanting to just talk to somebody who's been there and done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I genuinely believe that's a requirement for me, is to always be there to help anybody in that situation, help them work through what they need to work through. And also to help people understand that surgery is not necessarily the answer for you. It may not be. There have been a couple of circumstances where I have a couple of psychologists that I have worked with, and they will refer people to me to help them work through it because they feel like they need to talk to somebody who's, you know, been there, done that. And in a couple of circumstances, in one specific, the first time this happened, it really surprised me because the gentleman had been dressing when he traveled and they had no children, but when he was away from home, he always dressed, but his wife never knew anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was thinking about telling her. And so we went to lunch one day, and I said, well, I said, you know, your ultimate decision is going to be yours, but I can tell you this much. I know what the strong possibility is that what she's going to say going to feel is, really? You have been doing this and not being honest with me? What else are you not telling me? And it will drive a wedge in your relationship, just sure as shooting. And I got a email from him about a month or so later, and he said, thank you so much for that advice. I've decided not to tell her. I've decided not to do anything about it. And as a result, he actually gave a rather nice contribution to the organization I belong to, which was Tri-S, which is pretty much defunct now, but he gave a very nice contribution to it. So, yeah, it's something, it's not for everybody. And people need to think that through, especially if they're already married. And it is not something that has not, because, you know, just like I learned.
Right.
No wife is going to be, ultimately, they marry, a woman marries a man. They do not marry a woman. And it is an odd thing so many men tend to feel like that their wife should just be tickled plum spitless at this discovery of a new girlfriend. And that's why.
Doesn't quite work out that way.
Right? No, it does not.
Georgia, where can people find your book?
It is available on Amazon.com. It's available at Barnes & Noble. It is available on the publisher's website as well, which is iUniverse.com. It is available. If they're looking in the search bar, type in the entire title and subtitle, because there are some other Dear Mom and Dads and Mom and Dad titles, but you need to put in that subtitle if you don't know me, in order to get to the book. It is available in hardback, paperback, and electronic.
Okay, and you have a second book that's coming out. Do you know when that's going to be available?
No, I don't know that yet, because I am waiting I finally got smart enough to start working with a publicist, and I'm waiting for the results of that, because if I cannot afford to self-publish again. It's going to have to be picked up by a mainstream publisher who will publish the book and pay me for that privilege. That's what's going to have to happen. I continue to write. If that day ever comes, I will be ready and to shoot with both barrels, because I have one that is totally completed, and I have two others in the works, and a third one in the planning stages. So I will be ready,
Georgia,
to go to work.
You will be ready. I love it. Well, Georgia, I appreciate you coming on the show to share your experience and insights.
Thank you.
This is a contemporary issue in society, and there are, it's wonderful that you've had the courage and the strength to go through it and to then share your experience. We can only begin to understand. I mean, we're not in your shoes, but we do feel compassion for others when we start to discuss it and interact with each other. So thank you for your courage to bring it,
absolutely,
bring it out there.
Thank you.
Well, to our listeners, is there something about your innermost self that you're not accepting? Has your higher self been whispering something to you that you're ignoring or burying? Well, listen for the small inner voice that guides you in life and pay attention. Everything that you desire in life is guided by this inner voice, your intuition. Listen and act upon the guidance, and the world opens up before you. So thank you again to our listeners. Remember, nothing supports the work of authors better than picking up a copy of their books. You can also support the work of this program by going to anchor.fm to sponsor the podcast, Train Your Brain, Claim Your Power, and feel free to share the link with others who may find the courage to face difficulties in their lives, inspiration to pursue their passion, new information, and even ideas for entertainment through one of these episodes. To suggest an author or a topic for future episodes, please contact me at Susan at SusanSciarico.com. So thank you again for being with us, Georgia.
Certainly, absolutely.
Once again, the author is Georgia McGowan, and the book is Dear Mom and Dad, You Don't Know Me But, available on Amazon and other booksellers. Time to go, everyone. Bye for now, and have a great day.
Thank you very much for tuning in today. If you've been inspired by this show, leave a rating or review on iTunes and visit www.rainbowsoverruins.com to receive a free chapter from Susan's book. On behalf of Susan Sciarico, this has been Rebuilding Your Life, Moving from Disaster to Prosperity, sharing the journeys of those affected by sudden and great loss and what they did to heal, rebuild, and where they are now.